and welcome to the Fantasy Wargaming Podcast. We're your hosts, Tony.
And Paul.
So we've got the last of our Masters interviews. We've finished on a high, so obviously the last interview that's to go up from everybody is Craig. Obviously, last year's Master, triple qualified for the Masters this year, both on winning the English Championships and being invited as the current Master and scoring in the top 16. So must be one of the favourites. It's a bit of a funny interview, though, because we had some technical issues. So, yeah, Paul's pretty much cut himself out of the interview because there was a bit of a lag with your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, quite a massive delay. And anything I would say would kind of cut across five seconds later or so. So, yeah, it wasn't good. There was a bit of talking over from my end accidentally, and yeah, I just couldn't answer any questions. So if it sounds a bit weird, because I've edited myself out and there's like questions to, or answers to questions that have been posed that haven't been posed or whatever, that's the reason why. But yeah, let's lead straight in. Without further ado, here's our interview with
Craig, the Master Johnson. We're here with the last of our interviews. I'm very pleased to introduce the UK current Master, Craig Johnson. Hiya, Craig.
Thank you very much for having me. How are you both this morning?
In shock after swimming lessons. You are, as well as the current UK Master, you are also probably the most publicised player. Is there any podcast you haven't been on?
I'm sure there's a few floating around out there, but yeah, especially the last couple of weeks, it's been quite busy. So obviously I've been doing some Slan Rats. You guys have had me on. Bradley in the US has had me on. So it's been a busy couple of weeks podcast wise, but they're always fun to do. And the amount of different topics to talk about is great. Obviously this will be about Masters and, you know, my Slan Rats are about whatever pops into my head. And yeah, it's just nice that there's so much variety to chat about in the hobby, I guess.
So our first question would normally be about what's put you in the Masters, but obviously you are the current Master, but you still placed very highly in rankings and won TEC. So you triple qualified, didn't you?
Yeah, I went for the triple assurance of getting into Masters. And my initial assumption was that I would be actually awarded three places. So I'd be able to submit three army lists and then pick which one I wanted to use. But apparently that was misguided. It took the pressure off. Obviously, winning Masters means that you don't have to really think about your rankings and trying to squeeze into that top 16 by the end of the year. But I think a combination of Universal Battle at the start of the year, which was something to do week in, week out, which was quite nice to sort of stay involved in, followed by when real life events came back, you wanted to be involved in those. You know, you wanted to go to and see people in real life. So I still managed to squeeze in, I think it was five events this year. And yeah, triple qualify with a variety of armies.
Yeah, and that's it. You've used multiple armies. I mean, you were quite famous before that for using the Vermin. Obviously, that's changed quite a lot, but you do swap from army to army, don't you? Do you ever use the same list multiple times?
Not usually. I think it depends on whether it's an ETC year and you're practicing for a big event in terms of the ETC. If it was an ETC year, then typically around January, February, I'd try and almost lock in the majority of the list. So for example, Vermin Swarm, if I was playing Vermin Swarm at ETC, I would be using them from January or February through to August. The reason I'd pick them up in around Jan or Feb is that by the time I get to August, I'd be well rehearsed but not burnt out. I think any longer than that, I personally would suffer burnout from the army. I know there's a lot of people that spend, you know, years on the same army and don't suffer that burnout, but I think that's just part of how different people enjoy this hobby in different ways. I like to move around quite a lot, and so without ETC it's made jumping around a lot more viable and a lot easier to justify to myself, and especially with UB as well. Like, I do have a whole host of models and I've got a 3D printer, so I can feasibly access any army in real life, but it's a lot easier to do on UB. And
yeah
it's just one of those where I find enjoyment in jumping around. And there was a recent discussion about the painting requirements at Masters, And I got asked, do you already have an army painted up? And my answer was no, because I paint lists, and somebody phrased it the other day that I play lists. I think it was Dan Thomas on the list preview show. And he said that I play lists rather than armies. And I think that's probably true. There are some armies that I've gone back to time and time again, but I think it's because the lists that I can get out of those armies, I've really, really enjoyed.
You do have a kind of preferred style of army, though, don't you? A preferred style of list, probably. It's all about the movement for you, isn't it? I know you've talked about it before.
Yeah, 100%. I do really, really enjoy... I think the movement is the thing that you have a lot of control over, whereas, you know, magic, shooting, and combat are all fairly dice-reliant. And I just enjoy trying to make a complex board state and having a lot of moving parts. And it doesn't always work, because not all the books are designed to be played that way, which is why some books I've not really explored in too much detail. But it's why I was genuinely surprised last Masters when I used the Highborn Elves. On paper, it doesn't look like a movement-intensive list, but in reality, it really was. And I think it really surprised me how much I enjoyed that list. I was initially trying to push myself out of my comfort zone, but then realised that actually the multiple moving parts I enjoy in a list were there to explore in a list that I probably wouldn't have written by myself.
Yeah. So the list is in for this year's. Do you want to talk us through what you're taking? I mean, it doesn't have to be detailed about the specific list, just more of a generalisation of what you were going for.
Yeah, so I've actually really struggled to work out what to take to this Masters. I've written a few lists. I've written quite a lot of army books and like looked into whether I could do something. And it got to the Friday night about 10 p.m. I'd just finished a game with Colin, and I'd just lost 20-0 in about 80 minutes. So that was a harrowing experience just before list submission. And the choices were between an all-cav Dread Elf list, a Wild Heart Ogre list, or a triple Taurosaur and then Skink Cloud Saurian Ancients list. So all three are quite movement based. All three are quite, you know, they can play in every phase. Obviously, the Saurian Ancients have been better in shooting than the Ogres, but, you know, maybe not as good in other areas. And I've used Skink Clouds before. I've used Wild Heart Ogres. I knew that I would be fine taking them, but the all-cav Dread Elf, I just kept writing lists for, and I was like, I think this is what I want to use. I just lost 20-0 with it, like, minutes before, and I was like, actually, I still want to use it. And having seen all the lists publicised, and obviously haven't got my list in, I think it's the best list of the event? 100% not, but is it the list that I would want to use out of the 16 lists there? Yeah, I'm looking forward to using it. I'll probably be frustrated at times. I'll probably really enjoy it at times, but it essentially leans into a couple of Dread Princes on horse, 3x8 shadow riders with crossbows and 9 warlocks and then some supporting pieces floating around the edges. And it is very much trying to play into that movement phase. The issue with lists like that is that, you know, a Pyromage absolutely rinses it, for example. So it's not without its flaws, but it's
something that you expect them to do.
Yeah, exactly. You expect them to, like, for example, a high elf army tankers, for example, with a pyro adept, 3 bolt throwers and 20 queen's guard is absolutely going to rinse it. But that just means I'm going to have to change my play style and think about how to break the army down that isn't just running headlong at it. Because if I run face first, I'm going to get 20-0. So I think that's part of the appeal of lists like this, is that you do have to change your playstyle based on what's in front of you. And that's something I've always enjoyed trying to do.
Do you have many practice games then? I mean, you mentioned you've used it against Colin. Do you just before the Masters?
I played 3 practice games with 3 different armies. So I've played Colin Saurian Ancients 3 times. I played him with a 3x12 ambushing centaur list and lost 20-0. And then played him with a Wild Heart Ogre list and won 13-7. And then played him with the Dread Elves and lost 20-0. So it's not been the ideal run-up to list submission. And even last year's Masters with the High Elves, I played 2 practice games. I lost them both before Masters. So my practice games are few and far between. I do tend to only play at tournaments. So like English Championships with the Warriors, I hadn't touched or ever used Warriors before the English Championships. And that's fairly consistent, is that I build a list for a tournament, show up to the tournament, and then I don't play much outside of tournaments. Masters, I tend to try and get one or two in.
Yeah. Very good. So you've obviously played a lot of armies over the last year or two. Do you have a favourite one that you do find that you keep going back to after a little break? Or
yeah, I think for me, Beast Herds have a massive, massive appeal in that their playstyle is movement-based, is sort of that glass hammer, and they can slightly compete in every phase. My frustrations with the Beast Herd book is that I just don't think it's a very good book at the minute. I'm aware there's two at the Masters, and I think those lists are okay. I don't think they'll win. I think I chatted about this in my podcast on the Army Chances. I just think Beast Herds are in a not great place. And I don't know what's missing from them at the minute. I'm not really, I mean, I wrote a 3x12 ambushing centaur list because I love centaurs, and that 50% increase in ambush size was an interesting change, but I don't think it works. And I don't really know what would make me go back to Beast Herd, but they're sort of the army where I'm like, I'd love to play them, but there's just something missing. And I think it's a combination of, I think their magic setup is really poor. I don't think they've got good access in magic laws, and they can't compete with the six new books. So yeah, they're probably my main love. I mean, the Vermin Swarm, I used to love the style of list that I used to run, but obviously that book has completely changed. So, and I'm not interested at all in the new Vermin Swarm book. So it's probably Beast Herds are a standout from the others at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, your recent episode on the magic laws, I know, has resulted in Paul submitting a vampire on a dragon, on a zombie dragon with occultism, hasn't it, Paul?
Yep, 1,230 points of dragony goodness, guaranteed to it's got a really good magic phase and whatnot, but it's an interesting choice. Let's just say it's not something I would normally take, but I was inspired by your episode and just thought, wow, what the hell? Let's give it a go. Let's have a bit of fun. Plus, determined to use a model that I really love. So, see how it pans out. And it's always my excuse for the spoon.
I mean, occultism on a fast-moving model is a risk, but it's a wonderful thing to use. For example, the Great Bull in ID is something that I used and loved using. But you are, every turn, you're like, how much do I want to risk and push this to get into range? And it's a great lore. I do hope you enjoy using it over the weekend, and I hope you get success with it. It's just the amount of output that, for example, occultism can put out compared to, say, shamanism is unbelievable.
Yeah, so that's your excuse for the event anyway. So well done, you, Paul. So actually, that when you mentioned about pushing it and pushing it about, it made me think of our conversation with Haristo yesterday. And he was saying sometimes he misses out on big wins because he's quite a conservative player who sees risks everywhere. You do tend to be able to push a list to a big win, though, don't you? Is that because do you find you take a risk when you think it's worth it, or is it just the way you form your list, or what?
I think the key point to taking a risk is that you have to accept that it isn't always going to go right, and therefore having an insurance plan for if your risk doesn't pay off. So as an example, if you're going to charge, for example, a Swift Stride 9 charge, and that's going to be, you know, a really good opportunity, then yeah, I would probably take it. But then I would also set something up to, maybe try and insure that if it was bad, if it didn't come off. So that might be a counter charge or a flea path or something like that. So it's about looking almost two steps ahead rather than one step. I do think it depends on your style of army, and I think defensive armies don't want to take risks and offensive armies do. I think taking risks early in a game can open up the game much more later on. It's almost like an exponential curve where a small risk early on can have massive rewards later in the game. So I think quite often you will see me taking fairly big risks in turns 1, 2, and 3. And then if they come off, great. I've hopefully opened up the game for myself for turns 4, 5, and 6. If they don't come off, well, then I've got 4 turns to recover it, is sort of the plan. So yeah, a lot of Warhammer, Ninth Age, is about taking risks at the right time. And you know, some people take risks every single time they're available to them. Some people take risks very, very rarely. And I think it's a combination of how you want to play as a player, how good you are at sort of spotting two steps ahead, but also your list and sort of your aims for that game.
Yeah, I find I take too many risks and I'm trying to tailor in a little bit. But I don't know, just being offensive and out there to win, I don't know. It's almost like losing a game which you play to win is more fun than, you know, edging a small victory in a game that you weren't ever really in the running. But that's probably why I regularly find myself on bottom tables. So
I think some of that, though, is that if you go into a game, like let's say you've got Warriors and you're playing against a Sylvan Elf list that you reckon you should be beating big, well, taking risks shouldn't really mean you lose big. Whereas if you're playing against, say, Kingdom of Equitaine list, and you're like, actually, I'm probably going to lose this game. Well, if you're taking big risks, that can have the reward that it lets you win a game that you thought you were going to lose, or it can just compound the problem further where you end up losing big quicker. So,
yeah,
choosing when to take the risks, I think, is a big deal in that risks in some games are better than risks in other games.
I think you're spot on there. The amount of small losses I've turned to, you know, scoring 0 points is remarkable, because I just, you know, one thing doesn't pay off and then so I do something, you know, it kind of escalates up. That's my own problem. But anyway, yeah. So through the year, obviously, as we mentioned, you've been to 5 events and the UB. Was there any one event which you really enjoyed that jumps out at you as either an interesting pack or, you know, just a fun event?
I absolutely loved Underdog Brawl in terms of a pack. I sort of chatted with Shane about the pack before it sort of went live. We were chatting on Facebook Messenger. I've known Shane for years and years, and I was absolutely delighted that he went ahead and ran it, because I thought the pack was awesome. I thought it was a really different tournament. I loved the format of it. It only really works on you. So I got...
I was going to recap in that just for people who don't remember. Wasn't that the one where you got to veto some of your opponent's units and then you had to submit a list every round?
Yeah, so if we got matched up, then we would each veto a... What was it? It was a magic lore, a special item, a core unit, a special unit, and then one unit from like those the categories that are like, you know, powder and keg or chain beasts, for example. So yeah. I might veto like giants from Ogre Kingdoms. And it just meant you had to really think about different list design and sort of how you were going to go about those list designs. And I thought it was an absolutely fascinating event. Only really works on UB, obviously. So it's not really suitable for a real life event, but I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. I was put off it because it was 1 week, wasn't it, to kind of get your list in and your rounds. So I was looking at it thinking, I don't know if I can commit to 5 rounds at, you know, I think for me it would have had to be at least 2 weeks around, but then you're talking about a 10-week tournament, aren't you? It's a real slow burn.
And I think that was the disadvantage of UB tournaments, is that I thought for the most part they were really, really good and really enjoyable. But for example, the Masters last year on UB was a 6-week event, and it was a fairly intense 6-week event of, you know, you get paired up on the Sunday, you say you're going to play on Thursday, and then you've got 4 days to sort of think about your magic choices, your deployment. And it was an intense 6 weeks Masters, and Underdog Brawl was sort of similar, but also I tend to enjoy writing lists anyway. So like, writing a list where I've been told you're not allowed to use these 5 things was quite an interesting thought experiment. I didn't really find that any extra work personally. But yeah, it was an interesting and very, very different event.
Excellent. So, big one. Do you think you're going to win it? I mean, you've got to play to win, haven't you? And this is everybody we've spoken to, you know, you're in the Masters. So you're one of 16 who could win it. Do you think you're in a good place? Obviously, the amount of Masters you've won is... I don't know if you're ever confident on the way in.
This is it. I wasn't confident last year, and I wasn't particularly confident the year before that. I don't think I'm going to win. I think that's for two reasons. One is that, well, I think it's for three reasons, actually. One is that I'm not practiced enough, and I haven't tried the list out enough to know where the gaps are in it. And the last time that I really did that was 3 or 4 years ago with Sylvan Elves, where there was just a really obvious gap in my list that presented itself after one game, which is I didn't take any Forest Eagles as chaff. And I can envisage that being fairly similar with this Dreadelf list, where after a game or two, I'm like, oh, actually, I should have done that. And I've got one or two ideas of what those gaps might already be, if I'm honest, just from thinking it through the day after. The second reason is that I think there are some really good lists at the event. I think, for example, Hughes KOE could prove a bit of a surprise and a bit of a... the reports that are coming out from KOE doing well are fairly substantial. So I think the KOE book is good. And I back Hugh to... I know he's played games with that list on UB, as in numerous games. So I back him to have written a good list and to know what it does. I think Jake and Mikey, both on armies, they've both played for years. Both books are good in their hands. I think are fairly obvious shouts for a real chance. And then after that, as you said, it's a 16 player field. Anyone can have the right run of opponents or the right run of luck. And I think anyone could be there or thereabouts. I think the three that I've mentioned are probably the three that I would give a leg up to for various reasons. So yeah.
Very good. I think, everybody's strong in that field, which leads on, is it a different type of tournament to the others? I mean, because you're round two, round three, you're always in the top third and you're pairing off against, other good players. Do you find the Masters different in the ninth age?
Yeah, I think it's less draw dependent in terms of who you get, because you know that every player is good. So your matchups become more important, and the luck of the draw is less about the person and it's more about the army. And it's just, everyone at the event, because it's only a 16-person event, you chat to everyone at the event across the weekend. And so it's like this little community for a weekend. It's a really nice feeling around the Masters. I've always really enjoyed it, but it is pretty intense. You know that every game is hard. You know that every tournament point matters. Whereas I think if you show up to, for example, English Championships, you're not really thinking about, oh, am I in for the running until about round three or four? Whereas at Masters, from the off, you're like, oh, okay, I need to be on it from the start. It's just, I love it as a weekend. It's an intense weekend. It's probably the hardest weekend you'll have in a given year, other than potentially ETC. So, yeah, it's a wicked weekend, but it's a hard weekend.
Excellent. Final question for me, I think, and this is follows on from some of the other interviews. Do you find you struggle to take games in a light-hearted fashion and play in a whimsical? This obviously isn't specific to the Masters, by the way, because I don't think anybody would turn up with a whimsical mindset for the Masters. But do you find that you play all of your games competitively, or do you take it as it goes?
It's a good question. I think, I guess a few strands to go down on that. One is that I don't think the Ninth Age rule set necessarily lends itself to whimsical narrative battles. I think, and I chatted about this fairly recently, in that, for example, if you have an 8th edition Orc and Goblin army with loads of animosity and loads of, frenzy and random things going on, you're almost expecting random things to happen, and so you're happy to have sort of this narrative game where things go wrong and things go right. Whereas in the Ninth Age, because they've tried to make everything more reliable, you get frustrated when your reliable things don't come off, and it's more of a game of chess more than a game of, say, for example, Jenga. And one of those is certainly more whimsical than the other. I think the other side of it is that if I reflect on how I was 7-8 years ago, I took it much more seriously 7-8 years ago. I put a lot of pressure on myself to get into the England ETC team and to do really well at events where there were the tournament scene was bigger. And about 5-6 years ago, I probably realized that actually this is just a game of toy soldiers, and that the most important thing is showing up to the weekend and enjoying it. And there's been a couple of times where I've got really frustrated at how I've basically said I'm not enjoying it. I'm taking this too seriously. And I think for me, I mean, Friday night is a prime example of Master's List. I spent the last week or so writing probably 60-70 iterations of lists for Masters. And then I said to Pip, who's my partner, I was like, I don't want to do Masters next year because I know I take it too seriously. And I've got to realize that it is just a toy soldier event and I can show up purely for fun, or I just don't do Masters next year. Because like English Championships, I showed up with Fishmen and Seaweed Shortbread and wanted to push single models around the table. I ended up doing well, and I'd like to think that all five of my opponents thought I was playing in the right manner and a sporting manner, and that's very different to how I would have used to have been 7-8 years ago. Whereas Masters, it does sort of have this different pressure on it. So, yeah, I guess my aim for the weekend is to enjoy it rather than get frustrated if something happens.
Yeah.
For some reason, Masters, I've put this different pressure on myself, and I don't know why.
It's difficult when you put that pressure on yourself as well to play in the style that you think the game should be played as well. As in, you know, when it's going well, you're great. And you know what, when it's going badly, you know, you act the same way. Although we've played a number of times and you've always kind of done that, and vice versa. I think it's a good, you know, that it shows a good temperament of someone that when things don't go off and it goes wrong, that you kind of still play along in the same fashion.
Yeah, and I think at 90% of events, it's fine to do, like, it's easy to do that. I think Masters and ETC are the two of team events, especially ETC, when things go wrong, you know it hasn't just impacted you, so you can't just almost laugh it off. So team events, I think there is a little bit of a different discussion there about if you laugh off mistakes, you're almost being disrespectful to your teammates. So I think that's a slightly separate side of things. But I think the moment that I realised that this is a game of toy soldiers and I want to enjoy it is when I picked up my first most sporting trophy, and I was like, actually, I'm more proud of that than I am of like the majority of trophies that I've picked up over the years. And ultimately, I want people to go away from the games having thought, that was a good game and I really enjoyed that. And that's sort of the aim with every game.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. Look, thank you so much for your time, Craig. I'm sure you're going to do well. It'll be interesting. I think as well, you were saying there's a couple of little holes in your list, maybe. It'll be, you know, the matchups might fill those gaps for you. So it's all about the dice on the table as well. So you're obviously going to be the one that everybody's watching, I think, with given the number of times that you've won the Masters and the fact that you're current Master. And you missed one of the reasons why you might not win this year as well, which is obviously Jordan's got a big prize haul to give out. So that might slip through your hands.
Yeah, there is a random trend where if there's a trophy on the table, I'll pick it up. If there's anything more, if there's like cool models or vouchers or a cool sword, I don't think I've never won any of those. So yeah, I think Jordan's shot me in the foot.
Yeah. Well, look, that's brilliant, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hopefully see you guys soon.
Hi guys, it's me, Lucky Sixes from Proxy Table Gaming.
And me, Maddy P from the Paired Weapons Podcast.
The Masters competition is back. For your chance to win a selection of these prizes, including gaming accessories, 3D print vouchers, the Breach introduction game, and commissions from the Gobbo, simply answer this question. Which army was placed at the top of the latest tier list, released in December 2021? Was it Orcs and Goblins?
Demon Legions?
Or Beast Herds?
To enter, simply send your answer to the following email address. PairedWeaponPodcast@gmail.com. That's the PairedWeaponPodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to include your name, contact details, and your answer. Check out the Masters Review Show on the Proxy Table Gaming YouTube channel shortly after the tournament itself.
Thanks to all our partners and sponsors.
And good luck.
See you later.